Inside the Huddle with Sky Sports, Neil Reynolds and Jeff Rimebo.
Yes, hello and welcome to Inside the Huddle in association with NFL Shop Europe. We're sponsored by DraftKings.co.uk, your home of one-day fantasy sports. It's a happy new year from myself and Jeff Reinbold, our first one of 2017. But Jeff, only the first of two this week. It's playoff time, so we're going to two podcasts a week. Yeah,
the games get bigger in playoffs and the podcasts get better.
Yeah, so the second one this week, we will look ahead to the wild card games. On Saturday, we've got Oakland at Houston and Detroit at Seattle. And on Sunday, we've got Miami at Pittsburgh and the New York Giants at Green Bay. We've got all of the playoffs exclusively live for you on Sky Sports, all the way to Super Bowl 51 in Houston. But Jeff, Black Monday has come and gone, although we might want to call it Sad Sunday, because it was there were some early moves. So the last 5 years, we've had seven new coaches each season. We're already up to six. Now, it's kind of calmed down a bit, but we might still see a potential surprise here or there. We don't know as the teams fall out of the playoff race, but six so far. And I guess it was on Sunday night. First of all, we'll go through it. Chip Kelly and Mike McCoy. Were there any surprises there?
No, I don't think so. I thought maybe Chip might get a second year because, again, this is not two head coaches in San Francisco fired after one season, and that's really tough to deal with as an organization. McCoy, I thought the nail in his coffin was when they went up to Cleveland and couldn't beat the Browns. Right. And, you know, that's a team that's probably not going to be in San Diego next year, so it's going to be a tumultuous offseason for the Chargers. Tough to see because I really, in McCoy's case, you know, they did a good job. He and Telesco did a good job early on, Neil. And then I think what happened was they raised the expectation beyond the level that team could perform.
Yeah, he did win a playoff game. He went 28-38 in four seasons, but he had nine wins in his last 2 years. You know, I think we talked about this several times during our broadcast on Sunday. It is a what have you done for me lately league.
It is what it, that's exactly correct. I mean, it's almost to what have you done for me last week.
Yeah.
And you look at it, and that's just what you sign up for. I thought Philip Rivers' comments in his press conference were really insightful because he said, you know, he felt the same way. They asked about McCoy being fired. Yeah. He said, I feel the same way I felt in 2012 when they let Wisenhunt go. If I could have done more, if I could have thrown a few more completions, if we could have won a few more games, Mike would still be here. I think the players understand, too, that this is the nature of the business. Yeah. It's what they live with. It's what every coach lives with. And, you know, he said that Mike McCoy is a good football coach. He's been a good football coach in this league and will continue to be a good football coach in this league. He's just not going to do it as a head coach.
No, we looked and we talked about the 49ers on Sunday. And Chip Kelly went 2-14, and this is the third straight season they've ended the year by firing their head coach. They got rid of Jim Harbaugh. They fired Jim Tomsula after one season. Now they fire Chip Kelly after one season. And we talked about how, you know, how can you keep paying off all these coaches? They'll be paying off Jim Tomsula while they're paying off Chip Kelly, while they're paying a new coaching staff. But actually, you made a really good point on Sunday. How can you afford not to? Because the empty seats in San Francisco are glaring. So there's a financial impact straight away. But also, you want to win. You've got to win. So you have to make these changes.
You know what? These are 30. These owners, 31, because the Packers are owned by, you know, the
fans
basically. But there's 31 of the most competitive capitalists in the world owning these teams with deep, deep pockets. And these guys are used to winning. They've won in, you know, private business. They've won in their own lives, and they want to win. They get in. They don't get into owning an NFL franchise to just be part of a boys' club. They want to win. They want to stand on that stage and get the Vince Lombardi Trophy. That's all of their goals, and they're gonna. You know, they're not gonna stand by and most of these guys are older guys too.
Right.
So you know, they know that the clock's ticking. I just think when you look at San Francisco, and I think we need to talk about Buffalo too, Neil, because. There's obviously some severe structural issues in those. I won't call it dysfunction because I don't know it personally, but it just, you know, there's structural issues when a general manager doesn't know that a head coach is fired, when he doesn't know, as Whaley claims in Buffalo, that they were even going to hire Rex.
Well, let's talk about those a little bit then. Let's stick with the Bills, and then we'll double back to the 49ers, because Jed York was asked this week why he didn't dismiss himself, and he said, I own the team, you don't dismiss owners. But, you know, everyone's got to look in the mirror in San Francisco and try and find the answers. But that was incredible, the Doug Whaley stuff. You were watching it live as it was happening, his press conference. You were texting me last night, and I was trying to get caught up on it and couldn't believe some of what I was reading. This is a general manager, and they say it's a general manager's league, Jeff. He claimed he didn't know Rex was going to be hired, and he certainly didn't have any clue that Rex Ryan was going to be fired.
You know, and you go one step further with this thing, and you look at Anthony Lynn's press conference earlier in the week, which was a complete, you know, everybody gives Jimmy Tomsula, you know, a bashing for, you know, his first press conference as the head coach of the 49ers. But I'm going to tell you, Anthony Lynn looked like that job was way too big for him.
Well, and also, Jeff, he's probably wondering what the company line is, because the general manager doesn't know what the owner wants to say. And I think when you look at Doug Whaley, some of the stuff he said sort of countered what Anthony Lynn had said. He made Anthony Lynn look a little bit of a liar.
Well, yeah, they all look like they don't know, any of them know what next guy's doing. You know, the right hand doesn't know what the left hand's doing. And how can you run an organization like that when... The head coach that, you know, everybody is saying is they want the guy to become the head coach, right? It's not a lock, according to Mr. Pegula, but they want Anthony Lynn to be the head coach. And then they sit down Tyrod Taylor, and he says it's not his decision. They ask him whose decision was, and he said, I don't know. Right. They ask him, what do you know? And then Whaley says he doesn't know that they had hired Rex Ryan or that they had fired Rex Ryan. And his press conference was worse than Anthony Lynn's press conference. And then Pegula has to come in and try and clean up the mess at the end. And his disclaimer, his final disclaimer is, we're not a dysfunctional franchise. We're busting our asses to get this done.
Well, they're not dysfunctional, but they haven't had a coach last 3 years since Marv Levy. Jeff, that's a long while ago.
That's a long time ago. And... Don't tell me you're not, because every bit of evidence points in the direction of not a little bit, but some severe structural issues.
And some of these things must, I mean, obviously you want to be a head coach. If you're a young assistant, you want to be a head coach. But if you're, I don't know, maybe it puts off some coaches. Maybe it puts off some people from being a... If you're a coach of a certain stature, there aren't any of those big names out there.
Let me tell you something. I made the same mistake. And I'm going to tell you, I'm a young guy, and you get an opportunity to be a head coach in a situation that you know is tough. Mm-hmm. And you don't have a quarterback. And a lot of the other things that, much like Buffalo, like a lot of the franchises in the NFL. But you take it anyway, because you don't know if you're ever going to get another opportunity. Right. And really... You're really taking it, and when you should wait and hold off until you get a better deal, but so when you can never guarantee it.
So when you took it as a young coach, has it impacted you since then?
Yeah, because absolutely it does. Because first of all, you take it and then you fail, and you go into it with the idea. And I'm gonna just tell you. All these guys feel the same way. You're a highly competitive guy. You've had success. Yeah, you've had success.
I'll be fine.
I can outwork any problem that I got. Well, you can outwork any problem that you got, because if you don't have a quarterback, that's gonna make it tough on you. If you don't have the power structure the way it needs to be, that's gonna make it tough on you. So all of these guys that are out there that are being interviewed, you know, I'm gonna tell you, right now, think about this. If you don't have a quarterback, or if you don't have a proven quarterback, and I'm gonna go all the way to the West Coast and talk about that Los Angeles deal.
Yep.
You got a guy that's the first pick in the draft, right? Your organization has paid him a bunch of money. They've hung their hat on him.
And paid up a lot of draft picks.
And draft picks. And you think that you're going to go in there and fix him because you think you can fix him. And I'm talking to Sean Payton right now. If you think you're going to go in there and fix that kid... Don't bet on it now. I'm just telling you. You better have one. You're much better off staying in New Orleans where you got Drew Brees than going out there on some adventure to try and fix a guy that has not shown in any of the and in any of the film that I've watched, that he's an NFL starting quarterback.
Jeff, some of the stuff that came out of the 49ers, not so much this year, but last year, Trent Baalke got fired as well. He was the general manager. You know, I've heard some stuff where Trent Baalke was on the practice field coaching the defensive backs. I mean, you hear this phrase all the time, stay in your lane. And there's another example where that wasn't exactly how you're supposed to operate or run a franchise. And that affected Jim Tomsula. You know, he was the head coach at that time. But now Chip Kelly is, and this is where the sort of mudslinging begins, because Chip Kelly's now said, I wanted Dak Prescott. Did you see that?
Yep.
And that Trent Baalke didn't want to get him for me. I mean, this is kind of self-preservation 101. But again, that's a mess.
Absolutely. And think about that. Anytime somebody from higher up in the food chain, and the general manager next to the owner is the highest guy in most organizations, he comes down, he starts coaching on the field, you can absolutely bet that they have now, how do I say this in a correct way?
Emasculate.
Very nice. Thank you very much for
that's
that.
The right word,
thank you
it?
Very much. They have emasculated not only
chopped off certain items of the coach's anatomy.
Yeah, dear items to most men. Right?
they haven't kept the main thing.
But what they've done, not only that position coach, right? How do you go into the meeting room with your guys when all of a sudden somebody that should be sitting in a corner office, is out on doing your drills?
Players would be upset by that. If suddenly the GM's running you through drills, you'd be like, what?
Absolutely. And now the coordinator and now the head coach. Basically, you've now cut them at the knees.
Yeah.
And actually, a little higher than the knees. But
you posted again, Jeff.
But that's what I'm saying. That's the kind of dysfunctional stuff that just kills you. And it was really interesting to hear Jed York's comments, because he got a little Jerry Jones in him that they got into the league and had success early.
Right.
And then all of a sudden they think they got all the answers. And what happens? It's almost exactly the same scenario. They get in the league. They go to a Super Bowl. They can't exist with the head coach that they got. Jimmy Johnson in Dallas.
Yes.
Yeah. Harbaugh in San Francisco. Yeah. The only difference between the two is the Cowboys were in a different age where the salary cap didn't impact them as much and had better players. So it was able to weather the Barry Switzer storm and win another Super Bowl. But then it dropped right off just like San Francisco's done.
Gary Kubiak is another one who... He stepped away, Jeff, and this was a sad one, really, because he obviously loves coaching. He's a year removed from lifting the Vince Lombardi trophy, and we've talked a lot about the stress that coaching puts on you and your colleagues in that position. He's had a couple of hospital stays in recent years. We know he suffered the mini stroke. This year he missed a game. He had the migraine issues. This was a tough one to read about and hear about, because you know in an ideal world, this guy would still be the head coach of the Denver Broncos.
Yeah, and you're talking about a good guy.
Yeah.
A really good guy. But this game, Neil, I'm just going to tell you, this game at this level, when you get into pro football, it will eat you alive. I mean, it will absolutely eat you alive. There's a saying, and it's really true. We all love football, but football doesn't love anybody. Mm. And the game, if you allow it, will eat you alive. Gary has the challenge this year with his migraines and the other stuff. So they say you can't keep working the way you're working. You can't keep living the way you're living. He came back, managed it for a couple weeks, but we all revert back to our habits.
Right.
And he reverted back to the too long hours, too much taking it all on him, you know, not taking care of himself. And he just found out at the end it gets you.
So, Jeff, you can give us this insight, because you're in those kind of rooms and you're doing that kind of preparation. One of the things I read with interest from Gary Kubiak was him stating his desire to want to coach again. And now whether that is, and the way it was written was suggesting that he would take a coordinator's role. But isn't that the same hours? Isn't that the same challenge on your body? Isn't that going to be the same situation? Can you step away from being a head coach and be something less than that without still having an impact?
Well, I think there are two things. Number one, your personality isn't going to change based upon what job you have.
Yeah.
He's obviously a type A personality like most guys are that are in the business. And you're going to, I don't care what it is, you'd be selling insurance and you're going to be that guy. So you're right on that point. The difference, I think, is that when you are the head coach, Neil, you got to understand it's all on you. If you're the coordinator or your position coach, yeah, your position group is on you or your side of the football is on you. But when you are the head coach, it's all on you.
Right.
I mean, everything.
So the stress multiplies. Falls on your shoulders more.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is he still putting in the same hours?
I think he probably put in the same hours. And, you know, but the fact that every decision now impacts you, the salary cap, the free agency, all of it. Now, yeah, it does to a certain degree as a coordinator, but not to the degree that, you know, that you're the head coach. There's a lot, you know, hiring assistants, keeping your staff together, all that stuff.
Well, that's a good point, Jeff, you raised, because as a head coach, you have to be, every word you utter has to reflect the entire organization. I saw after the Washington game where Kirk Cousins throws the interception at the end of the game. Big disappointment. They don't make the playoffs, but now Kirk Cousins has got a contract negotiation to go through with the Redskins. There's one school of thought out there that Washington don't want to pay him what he wants, and that's going to be tricky. But Jay Gruden, the head coach, came straight out and said, this is a quarterback who threw for nearly 5,000 yards and was outstanding for a lot of the season. Now you think, actually, that's good that he's behind the player, but his position at the time now should be behind the team. So that's just one question answered, which could blow up into a story.
Oh, yeah, because, again, and this is some of the genius of Belichick. The less you say, the less you're going to have to defend, and the less you're going to get put in a corner.
Yeah.
And now you think about it, if your cousin's agent and Gruden says what he says, now you've got that to go into the...
Well, that's your most recent piece of leverage.
Yeah, I'm going into Dan Snyder with that right there.
All you've got is your leverage is, well, it's going to cost you $23.94 under the tag again. That's your one piece of leverage. The other piece of leverage is, well, my coach loves me. Because the most recent thing we saw on the field was an interception that ended your season. So that's where the coach is always, you know, going back to Kubiak, you've always got to be involved in every part of the...
One of the reasons why New England wins is the structure that they have. You never, ever, ever heard Scott Pioli or any of the guys that were, quote, the GMs in New England speak. They didn't speak. One guy speaks in New England, and that's Bill Belichick.
Jeff, as we go through this list, just wrapping up the coaches, we've got six then. So Jeff Fisher has had two goes around.
Mm-hmm.
Gus Bradley, just the one. Chip Kelly has had two goes around. Philadelphia, now San Francisco. Gary Kubiak has those health issues. Mike McCoy, just the one spell with the San Diego Chargers. And Rex has had two goes around now with the Jets and the Bills. Looking at this list then, Jeff, this half a dozen might never be a head coach in the NFL again.
Well, yeah, let's go through that. And you talk about it. And let's say Jeff Fisher, I can't see it, at least not for a while. And again, Jeff's now getting close to, I think he's 60.
Yeah.
You look at Chip Kelly, probably a better fit in college football.
Yep.
And he'll have a number of opportunities that way. I would see that happening before another NFL opportunity comes. Rex, I would think TV before an opportunity to be a head coach again.
Yep.
He might want to be a defensive coordinator somewhere. But, you know, even his reputation on defense has taken a hit based upon how they performed in Buffalo.
Marcel Darius came out quite critical of Rex's defense, said it was too complicated. I just want to go back to Rex in a second, but then wrapping up that list then, Gus Bradley and Mike McCoy probably don't have this.
I don't think Gus, because didn't have any success, and he's a defensive guy, and it's always harder for a defensive guy to get a second chance. McCoy, again, maybe if he goes back and resurrects himself as a coordinator
first.
Exactly.
Just on Rex, Jeff, I saw some interesting comments. I wanted to get into this with you on Sky Sports, but we didn't get the time on Sunday, which is amazing because we were sat in the studio for 12 hours. It was interesting, the comments from Sammy Watkins that said, was saying that this team needs discipline. They need a coach that the players might be a little bit more afraid of, and somebody who's going to demand that the players are professional. And I thought about this with Rex. And there's, and you know Rex very well, and mm-hmm. it's a fine line that he treads, because he is a player's coach, but, and he kind of gives the players the freedom to speak out. And then a couple of times that has, the players, some players have taken advantage of that. The Jets walking onto the practice field, eating hamburgers during training camp. And now Sammy Watkins is suggesting there that this team lacked discipline with all the penalties and all of that stuff. Is that because Rex gives them too much of a loose rein, or is this just somebody sort of sounding off after the coach has gone?
You know what? I think there's probably some truth in it. I think Rex functions best in an environment where he has really good leadership on his football team.
Yep.
And when you look at when he was at his best is when he was in Baltimore and he was coaching that defense mm-hmm. that had Mufasa in the right, middle. Right. And
Ray, he's gonna keep everyone
yeah, Ray in. Lewis was going to make sure. And you look in the back end and you've got veteran players
Ed
in the,
Reed.
Ed Reed and Woodson. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he had guys that had – that he needed around him. I think if you even go further than this and you look back at his dad, and they're products of their father, there is no yeah. question, both mm-hmm. he and Rob. When Buddy had his greatest success, he had Gary Fensick, and he had Mike Singletary,
right.
and he had Dan Hampton, and he had Sean Gale, and
they kept the locker room in order.
That was yeah. they. Buddy didn't have to do much about discipline. The
no.
discipline was in that room, and I just think he got into that Buffalo situation, and it was a different deal. Mm. And frankly, in some ways, coaching today is a different deal.
Yeah, I was gonna say it's a different league, isn't it? There aren't many Ray Lewis's around. Do you look at? I remember sitting and chatting to Ray Lewis, and he talked about how he kind of policed that locker room in Baltimore, and he was joking a little bit, but he said, you know, he would have guys come in, you know, how they wear their pants halfway down their backsides and all their underwear showing. Ray Lewis wouldn't have that. He made them wear their trousers the right way, and it was just a really small thing, but it showed there was going to be a player looking after things for a coach.
Absolutely, and that's when you have that, you really... The discipline comes from where it should come, which is from within. Coach Vermeil used to say it all the time. The only discipline that matters is self-discipline.
Right.
And, you know, that's so true.
Yeah,
in
you can make
Buffalo.
Players, you can make players do something you tell them to do, Jeff, but unless they really want to do it.
Yeah, well, here, let me just give you some, let me give you the economics of this, and you know this as well as I do, but I'm going to give it to the listeners. Marcell Dareus is making a bunch of money.
Yeah.
I mean, a bunch of money.
Yeah.
Now, you can find another coach, but it's awful hard to find another
right.
330-pound guy that can do what he can do.
Yeah.
Right? So if push comes to shove, who are you going to get rid of?
Yeah, same with the old Rodgers McCarthy thing, where you need Aaron Rodgers.
Exactly. Exactly. Because that's the players win the games.
Mm.
Now, this is where it really, really gets slippery, because when you start bringing players in and you start paying guys, you better bring in good guys that are character guys, and you better pay the ones and reward the ones that do it the right way. What happens, in Marcell Dareus is an example of what goes on in the NFL. Here's a kid that came out of college with some issues, all right? Well, he comes out of college with some issues.
Mm.
Then, all of a sudden, you take away the structure of college football, where, again, there's people to put you in bed at night, people
yeah.
to get you up, and
yeah.
all that other stuff. And you now become a man, and now you're a pro football player, and nobody's there waking you up in the morning, and nobody's taking you to class, and nobody's...
Mm.
So you lose that structure, and then you put $1 million in his pocket.
Right.
That's not a recipe for more discipline.
No, and you sign LeSean McCoy, who has had indications of being a me-first player a little bit when he was in Philadelphia, certainly had clashes with the coaches there, and you've got a quarterback who's trying to find his way of being a quarterback for the first time. Tyrod Taylor, he's got to worry about his own stuff. He's
yeah.
not like it's got Peyton Manning back there.
And then you got Mario Williams, who plays when he wants to play.
Right,
and I
right.
mean, you have, in Buffalo,
yeah.
you have a number of challenges.
Mm.
And you know, Buffalo is not a free agent destination, right? So it's going to be tough to get free agents there. It's you know, it's a proud franchise in a lot of ways, but it still is living off of those four great teams that never won a Super Bowl.
Right.
And the reality of the Buffalo situation is they're not good enough. And now they've got an issue with their quarterback. And what are they going to do at quarterback? Doug Whaley still believes that his guy, E.J. Manuel, is a, you know, a starting quarterback in the NFL. But every indication of every bit of tape I've ever watched is no.
Well, this is going to be interesting offseason as well for Buffalo, Jeff, because Tyrod Taylor is guaranteed $27 million this year if he is passing a physical in the middle of March. On the third day of the league year, the new league year starts in March. If he passes a physical, then he is on that team and he gets $27 million guaranteed. So they're going to cut him before that. That's the easy part. But now, he may have a sports hernia injury, may have a serious groin injury, might have to go under the knife and have an operation. If he's not physically healthy, he gets that $27 million guaranteed. I mean, if I'm Tyrod Taylor, I'm going to limp around for 3 months and take the money. This is a another mess we've got themselves into. And I'm not going to say it's on Doug Whaley because I bet he didn't even know about it. You know, but I mean, come on. It's like this is a... this is a worry, and it's going to be interesting to watch.
If he's not your quarterback.
Yeah, who is as well?
Exactly. Who is it going
to
be?
So you can see where you'd want to keep him, because we've seen stuff with Tyrod Taylor. He's devastating as a runner. Some of his deep throws are really nice. How did you get into a contract that, even if you want to keep him, which you should, how did you get into making him the highest paid quarterback in the NFL?
It's, again, an indication of... you know, like I say, you can use the term dysfunction if you want, severe structural issues. But again, that is not, and that's got to come on Doug Whaley. That's got to be on the general manager, because who are you blaming on?
Right.
Mr. Pegula?
Yeah, it's a bit of a mess in Buffalo at the moment. I've got a couple of questions I want to take out of the mailbag now, Jeff, because they relate to the coaching stuff. Phil Martin says, what's the best coaching job available at the moment?
Right now, with what's on the market right now, in my opinion, the best opportunity is Jacksonville. And that may shock people when I don't say Denver. But I think Denver's got some issues, because obviously, you know, you're talking about the quarterback situation. And then beyond that, you're talking about Wade Phillips' contract is expired. Are you going to be able to keep him? You know, what are you going to do with DeMarcus Ware? You still don't have a running game. You're deficient in the offensive line, and you got some age on some of your players. I think Jacksonville has a really nice young roster. You're in a division where you can get healthier faster. You got to look at who Denver has to play, right?
Yes,
they got
especially now.
Oakland, Kansas City. You know,
and San Diego.
And San Diego.
San Diego would win a lot of other divisions.
Yeah, right. Exactly. And San Diego's got a quarterback, right? Yeah. So and some young talent on defense, Bosa and those guys on defense. So to me, I look at it and I say Jacksonville.
Tom Marshall says, I think Josh McDaniels as head coach and Wade Phillips as defensive coordinator. Those are my picks for Jacksonville. Do you like it? I tell you what, Jags fans would take that. I think Wade Phillips is an interesting one to watch, Jeff, because obviously a new head coach is going to come in Denver. And he's going to be wanting to bring in his own assistants. I think there's going to be some kind of mandate from John Elway that if you want this job, we are re-signing Wade Phillips. You wouldn't want to let Wade Phillips in the market. I know he's 70, but Wade doesn't want to retire.
No, he doesn't want to. He's going to coach forever. You know, here's the thing that I wonder about, though, when you talk about that. BC, he wanted to re-up his contract last year. You know, he knew he was going into the last year of his contract. He wanted an extension, and the Broncos wouldn't give it to him. So, you know, again, Wade's a great guy. You know Wade. Wade's a great guy, one of the really good guys in coaching. But I'm going to tell you something. He's got some pride, too.
Oh, yeah.
You
know? Yeah, and he's got that edge to him as well. You talk about a type A personality.
Yeah.
You don't give him the respect he thinks
he deserves.
Yeah.
And I could see him, you know, walking and going somewhere else and working, because he was tied to Kubiak. They go back a long ways. They got deep Texas roots. They got known each other for a long time. Wade's been in Denver. Yes, he knows John Elway. He's been the head coach in Denver, all that stuff. But I just don't think that you can take that as a for granted.
I don't want to play fantasy football, but Wade Phillips in Jacksonville with Malik Jackson Yannick Ngakoue, who had 8 sacks, and Dante Fowler Jr. coming off the edge.
I mean, Ramsey in the back end.
Yeah, that might be quite nice.
I'm going to tell you something. They have what he needs, right? You got to have edge rushers, which they have.
Yep.
You got to have corners that can cover and safeties that can tackle. Mm. And if you get him those things, he's proven year after year after year.
He wins.
You're going to win.
One more that relates to the coaches. Hugh Simmons says, which is the most surprising non-firing in the NFL?
Well, you know, when I look at it, there were two that I thought might go.
Yeah.
John Fox being one.
Yeah.
And Todd Bowles being the other. Mm. And the reason I said Todd Bowles, even though Todd's just had the job a very short time, his football team quit on him. They didn't. I mean, that's hard to say. That's hard to say. But yeah. we got to be honest.
Right. Some of the games they did just didn't look like they were trying.
And especially the defense, which is his side of the ball.
Didn't they?
Yeah, that's his side of the ball.
Yeah.
And then they go up to, you know, but the Bills were a mess.
They were
watching the Pro Bowl.
Yeah, they had nailed it. They didn't even want to field kickoffs.
No.
They let it bounce in the end zone for a touchdown.
That was like a high school thing.
That's shocking, wasn't it?
Foxy's guys in Chicago competed.
Yeah.
He just inherited a roster that was really, really, really deficient, and he's had injury problems. So,
yeah.
I think he'll get one more season there, and I would think probably there'll be some changes in both those organizations. There's talk about Chan Gailey not coming back as the offensive coordinator. They got to figure out in with the Jets. They got to figure out what the heck happened on defense and get that cleared up, and then you got to decide what you're going to do at quarterback.
Quarterback, yeah, and same with Bears. You know, the teams. And all of these teams, with the exception of the San Diego Chargers, had some quarterback issues at some point this year. I wouldn't actually,
I mean, it's not a secret, because if you don't have a guy, and if you don't have a guy back there that can at least manage the game or make some plays for you, you know, Tyrod's not a great quarterback, but he can make some plays for you. You know, you look around and, you know, Bortles, I think, has a chance. I still believe the kid's got a chance. Now, it's come out in the last couple of days that he played hurt through the whole year.
Right.
And, you know, give him credit for that. But, you know, some of these other guys, there was nothing in San Francisco. And
some of that stuff comes out like that, where they say he's been hurt all year. And I wonder why, and I understand the competitive balance. You don't want to tip your hand to the opposing team, but maybe at some point that would have taken some of the heat off Blake Bortles that he's been getting all year. Say, you know, this kid's hurt, but he's playing through it. We're not going to tell you where he's hurt or what, but he's hurt. Just trust us on that. But, you know, because at least there's mitigating circumstances then.
Yeah, because it was, in some cases, hard to understand. There are some of the play out of him.
Stretch the field downfield was particularly a problem.
Yeah, and I just don't really know, you know, when you look at that. The kid's been through so much. He's been through so many offensive coordinators.
How often do we see that when a player struggles to get up to speed, going through all those different coaches?
Exactly. I mean, it's one thing if you're a guy, you know, that's a veteran. Mm. You know, if you're a guy that has been around the league, understands the league. No, I mean, Phillip Rivers, you could give him whatever coordinator you want, and he's going to
find a way.
He'll find a way. But you got these young kids that are trying to learn the league, and then, you know, you got guy wants to come in, and it's not just terminology, it's how they coach the guy individually and all the little nuances of what they want to get done offensively.
Well, if every little coach comes in and says, why don't you just try this as you throw the football? Just try this at the end of it, or this at the beginning of it. And, you know, this coach says that, and the other one says this, and you're like, oh, no, I can't remember what I'm supposed to do.
Well, yeah, and Neil, you've been around a lot of coaches, and we all, and it's just part of the personality structure that coaches have. Is you want to have input. You want you get into coaching because you want to coach.
Right.
You
don't
get into coaching because you want to stand there with the whistle around.
And it would be naive to think in a league where there are, you know, varying degrees of wide receiver, big, tall ones, short, fast ones, you know, or quarterbacks that like to run, or quarterbacks with a strong arm. Not every coach is going to be the same as well. Everything's different.
Absolutely. And everybody's approach is different. Everybody's personality is different. People don't realize how difficult it is just to get on the same page with, you know, personalities, right? And so much of coaching at the pro level is managing personalities, your own and the players that you coach.
Yeah, you'd hope they've got quite a lot of the technique squared away by the time they get to the NFL.
Well, actually, you know what? And once you get into pro football, and this is actually one of the reasons why the Patriots win and other teams don't, is you look at them and they're extremely good fundamentally. They work at their fundamentals. There are other teams where it's roll the ball out there and they're going to beat you, try and beat you with scheme.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, again, those are the teams that if they got good enough players, can. If they don't have good enough players, they're not going
to. Well, you mentioned the Patriots a couple of times. The road to the Super Bowl in the AFC will run through New England. They're the top seed. Let's just go through the playoff field. So New England at number one, Kansas City number two, Pittsburgh number three, Houston number four, Oakland number five, and Miami number six. Jeff, I wrote this down earlier. In terms of playoff starts at quarterback for those teams, you've got Tom Brady with 31, Big Ben with 17 for Pittsburgh, Alex Smith with 5 for Kansas City. Then you've got Savage / Osweiler, no starts. McGloin / Cook, no starts. Matt Moore, no playoff starts. Actually, you can add Tannehill to that if he gets fit, no playoff starts. It's a little bit lopsided there, the playoff field.
Yeah, and I think what you're going to find is, you know, very soon, those teams that have no playoff starts at quarterback will be on the couch watching those
teams, the ones that have play.
And
you mentioned that you think Kansas City offer the best, because everyone's saying New England are nailed on favorites to be in the Super Bowl.
Well, I agree with that. I think that because somebody's going to have to beat them in Gillette Stadium and in Foxborough in January, that's a tall order. But I think the only team, as you look at that has a good enough football team, I'm not talking about an offense or I'm talking about a football team, is Kansas City, because Kansas City can run it. Kansas City can throw it. Kansas City can rush the passer, which you're going to have to do to beat Brady.
Yep.
They've got back end guys that can cover. I don't know how they'll match up, whether they'll put Peters on Edelman or what they'll do, but you know, Barry is the best safety in my opinion in the league. So, and they got special teams that can score.
Yeah.
And that's big.
Yeah, Tyreek Hill has been a difference maker. I mean, if it gets to New England and Kansas City, that's going to be championship game, because New England are going to get one of these bottom teams, Houston, Oakland, or Miami, when they start. And I think you're right, Jeff. When you look at when have New England been bounced out of the playoffs? It was the Jets. It was the Ravens. I remember Ray Rice ripping off a couple of big runs. There was pressure on. It was all what you said, being able to run the football and get pressure on Tom Brady. And you look at what the Chiefs can do, they can do it off the edge, but they've also got Dontari Poe, Chris Jones. They can do it straight up the middle as well, which is key against Brady.
Absolutely. And you know, when you look at that and you say, how do they match up? And you know, you talk about what they have defensively, and then think about what they have offensively. What is New England always going to do? And I thought they did. Matt Patricia did a great job of it on Sunday against Miami. They're going to take away what your best thing is. Now, Jay Ajayi comes in there off of a 200-yard game against Buffalo and really was not a factor in the game.
No.
But who are you going to take away when you start talking about Kansas City?
Who is Kansas City's because Travis Kelce?
You're going to take Travis Kelce away, but you got Tyreek Hill and, you know.
They don't have a superstar that you,
there's not
you
a,
suddenly make them.
But they can do enough of all of it.
Yeah.
You know, Sharkhandrick West is, you know, is not Jay Ajayi, but he's a good back.
Yeah.
Alex Smith is not, you know, he's not Peyton Manning, but he's a good enough quarterback to win with. You know, Macklin is back. I think they got enough weapons to make it tougher on New England than really Miami. When you look at that game, I thought it was really good by Patricia. They just said, hey, Matt Moore is going to have to beat us. We're not going to lose this game to Jay Ajayi.
We look at the NFC playoff field, Jeff, and it's Dallas at number one, Atlanta at number two, Seattle at three, Green Bay have won six in a row at number four, the Giants with one of the best defenses in the NFL at number five, and Detroit at number six. There's your star power at quarterback. You've got Dak Prescott, who's been the darling of the league, Matt Ryan, who's actually only 1-4 in postseason, so it's going to be a big playoffs for him. Russell Wilson's won a Super Bowl. Rodgers has won a Super Bowl. Eli's won a couple of them. The NFC, at first glance, looks a lot more competitive, especially when you think as good as the Giants have been on defense, and they've beaten Dallas twice, and Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers, the winner of that Giants-Packers game is going to visit Dallas in the divisional round.
And that'll be a heck of a game. I'm really anxious to watch this Giants-Packers game.
Well, unless Detroit beats Seattle. I'm already writing off Detroit.
I just think that game between the Giants and the Packers is going to be the team that comes out of there, if they come out of there healthy, has the best chance to beat Dallas. I really believe that. Here's why. I think that we've seen some warts in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
How good is their running game really? How good is their defense
miss Earl
really?
Thomas, don't they, Jeff?
Yeah, they really miss Earl Thomas badly. You look at statistically, it's amazing how much more they've given up offensively, or their defense has given up since he's been out of the lineup. So I think that the team that could get to Dallas would be the Packers, because they can score with Dallas.
Yep.
Or the Giants, who's beaten Dallas twice.
Yes.
And it won't go into Dallas and be intimidated. So I think that game right there is going to provide the biggest test for the Cowboys.
One other thing, just to note on the playoffs, Jeff, half the playoff field from 2015 didn't make it this year in 2016, including both Super Bowl representatives. This is just life in the NFL, isn't it, from year to year? And why you have hope, because Dallas went through a miserable season last year.
Yeah, you know what? And this is why every fan of every team can, as miserable as you feel right now if you're a Browns fan, or as miserable as you feel right now if you're a Jags fan, or any of the 20 teams that are not in the playoffs, have faith, because this is an indication, this is a validation of the system that provides for opportunity for every team every year. The salary cap, the draft, free agency are all designed to do exactly this, give everybody a chance. And, again, you look at some of these teams and think about where they were last year, or maybe the year before. Think about Oakland. Oakland, if they don't get their quarterback hurt, comes into this thing maybe as a favorite.
Yeah. Well, Atlanta fell away, didn't they, Jeff? Giants got their coach fired last year, Tom Coughlin. Detroit went through misery mid-season, and Jim Caldwell barely survived. The Dolphins were bottom of the AFC East. I mean, you can turn it around.
Yeah, absolutely, you can turn it around. And that's, again, that's hope for everybody that is in Buffalo, and everybody that's in San Diego and Los Angeles and all every team.
That hope is reigning in Chicago. And after this podcast, you and I are going out to drink a couple of pints of what Alshon Jeffrey's been having. Because did you see, he said the Bears are going to win the Super Bowl in 2017. Now, come on, Alshon, one step at a time.
Exactly. I think the drug testing guy might be around.
Yes, he did miss four games earlier this year, so maybe he should go and be tested again. One quick thing I want to just chat on. We touched on it a little bit. Kirk Cousins is going to be a story. He's already indicating in the media he's not going to be signing a team-friendly deal. He wants what he feels he's going to get, or he's going to test the market. He's going to be tagged. If he's tagged again, Jeff, it'll be $23.94 million. I think I mentioned this in our show on Sunday. If you think you're just going to go out and pick up another journeyman quarterback to do what Kirk Cousins has done, and I've seen him play at Wembley, and I've seen him throw for close to 5,000 yards. It's a top five offense. I think they're mistaken, and I think it'll be a dangerous game to play. What do you think happens there?
I know this, that, and I'm gonna you go to Tesco, go to Waitrose, shoots, go to Harrods. You're not going to find them in the grocery aisle.
Right.
They're just not there. And you can look in the draft, and I'm telling you, they ain't one in the draft either.
No.
So you're going to pay what you have to pay to keep that guy. If they don't, they are absolutely sabotaging what can be a really good football team.
Yep. I mean, because you can build through the draft on defense. If you're worried about your defense and the secondary and you can still spend. It's not like if they're going to pay him top dollar, which is going to be around about that, he's going to be getting $24-25 million a season. That's always going to go up, and you can still live within that. The Colts have had Andrew Luck on that salary this year. Now, they weren't hugely active in free agency. But I still think you can do it without crippling your roster.
Yeah, where they're going to have to look is... And
you've got to draft well as well.
You've got to draft well. Exactly, because here's the reality of the salary cap. When you have to pay what you have to pay for marquee players, left tackles, corners, edge rushers, primarily quarterbacks, but that's where your money's going to go. Then you have to backfill with lower-end salaries, which is young guys, rookies. So you got to draft extremely well. And you got to be extremely selective in free agency and hit in free agency. If you talk about a team that did a great job in free agency, talk about the Giants. Because when they gave Olivier Vernon the money that they gave him, and they gave Snacks the money that they gave him, and they gave all those guys, Janoris Jenkins, and all those guys that they got as big money free agents, every single one of those guys had great years. What kills you in free agency is when you go out and give a guy a lot of money, and then he gets fat and doesn't play.
Albert Haynesworth.
Yeah.
That was a question as well about Kirk Cousins, came from Just Lambert. We had a question from Phil Edwards. We kind of touched on a lot of these. Phil Edwards wanted to know who could derail the Patriots and Cowboys, because the last three Super Bowls have all been number one seeds. We sort of touched on that as well. We had Jamie Watts asking who can knock off the Patriots. We sort of suggesting the Chiefs there. So we've covered off a lot of that. Let's just take this one from Andy Gibson, Jeff, who says, do you think Belichick and Tom Brady will retire on top like Peyton Manning if they win the Super Bowl? Jeff, to me, they're kind of machine-like. They just hit reset and go again in 2017. I mean, it's going to end at some point, but all the while Brady can play like that, I think they just hit reset and go again.
I agree with you. I just don't see in either of them any indication that they've lost the competitive fire. And, you know, Tom Brady's an amazing guy because he's got some physical limitations. He came into the league with some physical limitations. I mean, nothing is more incriminating than
his combine
where he's standing in his underwear and he looks like a bad day at the beach.
But Jeff, I mean, you know what? He came in running like that, and he looked the same when he ran for that first down on the first drive
exactly.
on Sunday night.
That's and his done. Body's gotten marginally better, but not much better. But he has an incredible ability to process information quickly. He gets the ball out of his hands. He's amazingly accurate, and he has enough arm. So it's not like his skills are diminished in some way. Luckily, too, he's not faced, you know, Manning had the neck injury at the end of his career.
It's surprising that Brady is playing now at an age that was older than Peyton Manning last year, because Manning looked every bit his age last year and Brady doesn't.
Yeah. Well, and I think, too, you know, for most of his career, Brady's been kept on his feet by the system that they run.
Yeah, yeah.
And again, I think that's, you know, once you have surgery, that's especially neck surgery, that's tough. That's tough.
One more question. Matt Jackson says, how do you rate the Atlanta Falcons' chances of getting to the Super Bowl?
You know what, Matt? I'm going to say this, man. I think they are a good football team. Now, what was absolutely incredibly interesting to me was when we had Greg Jennings in the studio and we talked off camera. He really, really, it wasn't that he didn't like Matt Ryan. I don't want to paint it that way. But didn't you feel, Neil, that he almost looked at Matt Ryan the way that people look at, Andy Dalton?
Oh, absolutely. He was not buying Matt Ryan at all. And I kept trying to say, well, he's got these great weapons around him. He's like, yeah, but he has a game on the line.
Yeah, that's what's his big deal. With the games on the line, will he make the right decision?
And I guess, you know, Greg's in a great, and it was great having Greg on. He was a great guest for us. But that's, you know, Greg's caught passes from Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers, you know. And there's a certain it factor that goes back to that it factor. That's there with those guys. And in the postseason, we're about to see this. We're about to start the period of the NFL season where you can really write your own legacy and you can write your career path. And that's why the numbers will come up that Matt Ryan is 1-4 in the playoffs until he has a good
isn't that amazing? Because you think about the great ones that have played. I mean, the great ones, the Hall of Fame kind of guys. And Dan Marino, for all he did, will always have that slight tarnish on his image, his playing image, that he never won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, and it's, I guess, comes into that argument of, well, you know, it's a team game, and it's about, because Trent Dilfer did win a Super Bowl. And
does that make Trent Dilfer a better quarterback? You know, not even close.
Rex Grossman played in the same number of Super Bowls as Dan Marino. It's just, that's always a slippery slope to go down, but it is one that we look at because the quarterback is expected to deliver championships. And I think Greg was he didn't even, and that was the thing, Jeff, he didn't say, well, I don't like the arm strength, or, you know, and we talked about stuff like that. He actually said, Alex Smith, in terms of the way he throws, is a game manager. He went, trust me, you know, you catch passes from Alex Smith, he's a game manager. But it wasn't even talking about the physical limitations of Matt Ryan. It was, he's got to show me he can do it in the clutch.
Yeah, it was really, really interesting to me. And I thought it was insightful because there, like you say, there's a guy who's been there, done that, and understand what it takes.
Yeah.
I really think this is going to be interesting because I like Atlanta, and Atlanta is my dark horse in this thing. What concerns me about Atlanta is if somebody can run the ball and is willing to run the ball and keep them on the sideline, whether they'll be able to handle the pressure mentally. Because what happens to you when you play a team like Dallas that can take 10 minutes off the clock and just drive it down the field, and you 13-14 play drive, and is now you get the ball back on offense and you're down 7-0 and you know you're not going to see the ball for another, you know, maybe you get one possession in the quarter. All of a sudden you're going, we got to score every time we get the ball. And that gets you, that creates a mindset that's not healthy.
It's a big off season, big postseason for people like Alex Smith, who's going to be always considered to be that kind of middle of the road safe person. If he could take the AFC crown away from Brady and go to the Super Bowl, that puts him in a different light. And it is going to be a big playoffs for Matt Ryan because he does have that help around him now, Jeff. And you look at the others in the NFC. Wilson's won his Super Bowls. Aaron Rodgers has won Super Bowl. Eli's won his Super Bowls. Big Ben has won a couple of Super Bowls. So they've kind of got their legacy already there. But Matt Ryan's got this chance to be put in that category. Same with Matthew Stafford, but he doesn't have the help around him.
You know, and I'm going to take it one step further, and you're exactly right. But let's talk about the coaches. Andy Reid. This may be, you know, Andy Reid's been there, didn't win it, and been to I don't know how many NFC championships.
All those ones that Philadelphia got there every year, didn't they? Yeah. For about 4 or 5
and
years.
So, you know, it's almost like the quarterback. He's almost like Andy Dalton. It's like, but. I think he's a great football coach, but he hasn't won a Super Bowl.
No, and that is really, because there's a lot of coaches that take 4 or 5 championship game appearances, but it's always
is Brian Billick a better coach than Andy Reid because he won one Super Bowl? That's the same question.
Well, we'll find out all of this stuff as the playoffs unfold, and we will be back later this week to preview the wild card round. Jeff calls for 2 and we get 2. That's just how it works.
I wasn't me calling. It's the fans calling, the listeners calling.
We appreciate that. So we will be back later this week to look ahead to the 4 wild card games. Until then, say goodbye, Jeff.
Aloha.